Welcome to Torah Dimecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Lynn Kraft, and today we will be learning Malachim Bet, Perek Yud Bet, Chapter 12. In the last Perek, in Perek Yud Aleph, in Chapter 11, we learned of Yoash's salvation from the murderous clutches of his grandmother Atalia by his aunt Yehosheva, who had hidden him in the Beit HaMikdash, where he remained concealed for 6 years, until Yehoyada the Kohen Gadol staged a revolt against Atalia and anointed Yoash as king. In Psukim Aleph through Bet, verses 1 through 2, we're officially introduced to Yoash as with the standard protocol of introducing kings in Sefer Malachim. We're told that Yoash became king when he was 7 years old, and that it was during the seventh year of Yehu's reign in Malchut Yisrael, and we're told that he reigned for 42 years. In Pasuk Gimel, in verse 3, we're told, "Vayas Yehoash hayashar be'enei Hashem kol yamav," and Yoash did that which is straight in Hashem's eyes all his days. "Asher horahu Yehoyada hakohen," in which Yehoyada the Kohen instructed him. After reading the first half of the pasuk, we may be under the impression that Yoash followed Hashem for his entire life, but the second half of the pasuk qualifies the first half, explaining that Yoash followed Hashem only as long as Yehoyada lived and actively wielded spiritual influence over him. Which seems to imply that as soon as Yehoyada died, Yoash didn't necessarily follow in Hashem's ways any longer. And this transformation is merely hinted to here in Malachim Bet, but it is actually described more explicitly in Divrei Hayamim, which we'll discuss further towards the end of the parak, because it describes Yoash as he gets older. In Pasuk Dalet, verse 4, we're told that despite the fact that Yoash did what was right in the eyes of Hashem, like many of his predecessors, he still did not remove the bamot, the platforms on which Bnei Yisrael brought karbanot to Hashem outside the Beit HaMikdash, which had been forbidden from the time of the Beit HaMikdash was built. And then in Psukim Hei through Yudzayin, in verses 5 through 17, we're told of Yoash's efforts to renovate the Beit HaMikdash, which was by now over a century old and likely falling into disrepair. According to Divrei Hayamim Bet, Perek Chavdalet Pasuk Zayin, chapter 24, verse 7, the disrepair was actually not due to natural wear and tear over time, but rather to Atalia's deliberate destruction of parts of the Beit HaMikdash. And of all people, Yoash likely knew intimately how desperately the Beit HaMikdash needed a renovation, since he had actually lived there for the first 7 years of his life. Furthermore, perhaps this was Yoash's way of expressing gratitude. The Beit HaMikdash has saved his life, and so now he wants to save the Beit HaMikdash by providing the necessary repairs. In Psukim Hei through Vav, Yoash initiated his first effort for the renovations, in which he told the Kohanim that all the money that was brought by the people to the Beit HaMikdash, and he then breaks down this money into four separate categories. One, Kol Kesef HaKadoshim Asher Yuvah Beit Hashem, the money that was brought for the sacred things like Karbanot. Two, Kesef Over Ish, money that was brought for the census, right, when every member of Klal Yisrael brought a chatzi shekel, a half shekel, to be counted. Three, Kesef Nafshot Arko, money that was brought as a donation based on one's personal value. And four, Kol Kesef Asher Ya'aleh Al Lev Ish Lahavi Beit Hashem, money that was brought as a donation specifically for the renovations of the Beit HaMikdash. And so Yoash tells the Kohanim that all this money should be given to them by the people they each knew, and then the Kohanim should use the money they were given to repair the parts of the Beit HaMikdash that needed fixing. Unfortunately, however, in Psukim Zayin through Chet, in verses 7 through 8, Yoash realized, we're told, in the 23rd year of his reign, that the Kohanim hadn't made the necessary repairs to the Beit HaMikdash that he had asked them to, and he asked them why they didn't follow through on the requested renovations. It appeared that the initial plan to have the Kohanim collect the money themselves wasn't working. And so Yoash suggested an alternative plan. Va'ata al tikhu kesef me'it makarechem, and now don't take the money from the people you know. Ki leveda kabayit tenuhu, rather, give it toward the broken parts of the house. And so in Pasuk Tet, in verse 9, the Kohanim agreed to the new plan. And in Pasuk Yud, verse 10, Yehoyada the Kohen Gadol placed a chest right next to the Mizbeach, where the Kohanim would place all the money that was brought to the Beit HaMikdash. And when they saw in Pasuk Yud Aleph, in verse 11, that the chest had become full of collected money, the king's sofer, his scribe, and the Kohen Gadol counted the money that they had collected, and in Psukim Yud Bet through Yud Gimel, in verses 12 through 13, they paid it to the people they hired to do the renovation. So it was no longer the Kohanim who were asked to make repairs, but now they hired outside employees. And the people that they hired were Harashei Ha'etz, carpenters, Bonim Ha'osim Beit Hashem, builders, Goldrim, masons, and Chotzvei Ha'even, the hewers of stone. They also used the money to purchase the necessary materials to fix the Beit HaMikdash, such as wood and hewn stones. Pasuk Yud Dalet, verse 14, specifies that the collected money was not used for any silver or golden vessels that were used in the Beit HaMikdash, such as basins or trumpets or other musical instruments. And we're told in Psukim Tetvav through Zion in verses 15 through 17 that they did not need to keep tabs on the workers that they hired to make sure they were using the money correctly, ki be'emunah himosim, because they did it faithfully. In other words, they didn't need to check up on the workers since they trusted them implicitly. And we're told in Pasuk Yud Zayin, in verse 17, that the money given for the Karban Asham, the guilt offering, and the Karban Chatat, the sin offering, were not placed in the chest of the Beit HaMikdash. That was given to the Kohanim themselves. We see from this narrative that as Yoash grew up with Yehoyada at the helm, the Beit HaMikdash really remained the center of his life, and he focused much of his energies on its renovations, raising the necessary funds to implement the appropriate repairs. However, ironically, as hinted to back in Pasuk Gimel in verse 3, this all seems to have been reversed towards the end of his life. In Psukim Yilchat 3 Yitzhat, in verses 18 through 19, Hazael, the king of Aram, attacked Gat and captured it, and then he set his sights on Yerushalayim. Yoash, wanting to stop his advance on Yerushalayim, decided to bribe him. And where did he get the money from? None other than the Beit HaMikdash itself. Vayikach Yehoash Melech Yehuda, and Yoash the king of Yehuda took, et kol hakadashim asher hikdishu Yehoshaphat v'Yehoram v'Achazyahu avotav Melech Yehuda, all the sacred things that Yehoshaphat and Yehoram and Achazyahu, his fathers, kings of Yehuda, had dedicated, ve'et kadashav, and his own sacred things, ve'et kol hazahav hanimtza be'otzrot Beit Hashem u'Beit HaMelech, and all the gold that was found in the treasures of the house of Hashem and the palace of the king. This is the exact opposite of Yoash's original desire to raise money in the Beit HaMikdash for its necessary repairs. Right now, he's taking the very money in the Beit HaMikdash that had been consecrated for sacred things and for Hashem, and now he's giving it away as a bribe to a cruel foreign king who worships Avodah Zarah. While this is all we hear about Yoash's religious reversal in Sefer Melachim in this parak, in Divrei Hayamim, Bet, Parak Chav Dalet, in chapter 24, we're told a lot more detail about how complete the spiritual turnaround was. We're told that as soon as Yehoyada died, the officers of Malchut Yehuda bowed to Yoash, and he started listening to them, and that these officers had forsaken the Beit HaMikdash, and instead they worshipped Avodah Zarah. And so Hashem became very angry, and he sent Nevi'im, prophets, to bring them back to Hashem, but unfortunately they refused to listen to them. And when Zechariah, the son of Yehoyada, received Ruach Elohim, the Spirit of God, and he got up to rebuke the people for violating the mitzvot of Hashem, and he warned them that Hashem would leave them as a punishment for their evil deeds, they stoned him to death in the courtyard of the Beit HaMikdash. Divrei Hayamim Bet, Perek Chav Dalet, Pasuk Chav Bet, chapter 24, verse 22, proclaims, V'lo zachar Yoash HaMelech HaChesed asher asa Yehoyada aviv imo. And Yoash the king did not remember the loving kindness that Yehoyada his father had done for him. V'yaharog et beno, and he killed his son. In fact, Divrei Hayamim presents the same attack of Hazael that we learned about back in Psukim Yudchet through Yudchet in verses 18 through 19 as having been a punishment for Yoash's abandonment of Hashem and worshipping of Avodah Zarah. The question we can ask is, why did Yoash seem to have turned against everything he knew as a boy, right? Everything that he grew up with, all the values, as soon as Yehoyada died, he seemed to have given it up. But why? Perhaps, since his entire monarchy was the result of others' rescue operations and others' teachings, when he grew up, he desired to assert his own independence from his original supporters and role models, and unfortunately that led to turning away from God. And so in conclusion, initially, Yoash seems to have had the potential to turn Malchut Yehuda around. He was hidden from his cruel grandmother, who represented the downfall of Malchut Yehuda. He was raised in the Beit HaMikdash by the Kohen Gadol himself. In fact, this biographical detail is extremely similar to the years, to the early years of none other than Shmuel HaNavi, who was also raised in the Mikdash by the Kohen Gadol of his time, known as Eli HaKohen. And we know that Shmuel ultimately became the leading Navi and Shofit of his generation. And even more than that, when Yoash was crowned king, he entered into a renewed brit with his people and with Hashem. And so Yoash really displayed tremendous potential for leading a sincere religious reformation in Malchut Yehuda. Unfortunately, however, whereas his kingdom began with the tone of potential spiritual reformation, unfortunately, Yoash reversed that tone as he got older, and instead he followed the ways of his evil grandmother, from whose bloody hands he was originally saved. Despite his initial salvation from the hands of a murderer from within the palace, right, his own grandmother, we're told in Psukim Chafav to Chafbet, verses 21 to 22, that his life was ultimately ended by the hands of murderers from within the palace when his own servants assassinated him. This ending of his reign reminds us of so many Benyel ends in Malchut Yisrael. Perhaps because he ended up following the ways of his grandmother, who was a scion of Malchut Yisrael, he suffered the same fate as many of the kings of Malchut Yisrael. And in this reversal, Yoash actually echoed Yehu, his royal counterpart in Malchut Yisrael, who also debuted with unbelievable potential to follow in the ways of Hashem, but who went too far and also ultimately worshipped Avodah Zarah. In these prakim, we see the lost potential of B'nai Sha'al's kings to transform themselves and their relationship with Hashem, and we watch helplessly as the nation begins or continues their downward spiral towards galut, exile, and Khorban destruction. The parak ends in Pasuk Chaf Bet, verse 22, with Yoash's son Amatya rising to the throne. We'll learn more about his reign in two parakim from now, in Parak Yud Daled, chapter 14. In the meantime, in tomorrow's parak, Parak Yud Gimel, chapter 13, we're going to switch our focus to Malchut Yisrael during Yehu's dynasty. This year was dedicated by Michelle Levine and Susan Schuster and their families in memory of their beloved mother, grandmother, and great-grandmother, Rebbetzin Gloria Leff, Golda Tzivia Bat Baruch. Rebbetzin Leff was a highly regarded principal and Torah teacher, a master educator, whose deep love for teaching Tanakh inspired hundreds of students throughout her lifetime.